Hey, it's me, Max Chair, and you're listening to Video Nom Noms. Thank you for listening. Whew, I'm a little hot to trot this morning. I've had some coffee, and I received the very sad news that Taylor Hawkins, the drummer for Foo Fighters, has passed away. Now, as far as I know, Taylor Hawkins was the drummer for the Foo Fighters for their entire career. Excuse me, I'm going to take another sip of coffee, and I'm also going to take another hit of weed. And then I'll be back to chatter. So just one moment, please. I should have just done this before I got on the mic, but I was rocking out. I had a kind of playlist of Foo Fighters songs. Basically four songs in particular that I really just love and really groove to. They're like my four favorite Foo Fighters songs right now. And if you want to know what they are, go to Vide, that's V-I-D-E dot O-Nasties, that's O-N-A-S-T-I-E-S, on Instagram, and check out my story, and you'll see the playlist of Foo Fighters songs for today. So those are the four main songs. I may play some other ones, but probably not. It's kind of making me sad to listen to Foo Fighters, actually. I don't know why. I'm not, like, a big Foo Fighters fan. I'm not even, like, a big Taylor Hawkins fan. I think he was, like, a very good drummer. But I actually still like Dave Grohl better as a drummer than Taylor Hawkins. But I think Taylor Hawkins was better for Foo Fighters. Although, apparently Dave Grohl actually played all the instruments on the first Foo Fighters record. Anyway. So I guess Taylor Hawkins came in on the second one. I don't know. It just makes me feel like I'm getting older, I guess. Which is so kind of corny and cliche to say. And I'm really not. I'm still very young. I'm still barely into my 30s. But it just, I don't know. Foo Fighters is just one of those bands that I kind of grew up with. Nirvana was like a little bit before me. That was like a little too edgy for me. Foo Fighters was always more poppy, so I could kind of get into them more. I was never a Foo Fighters fan. I'm still not. I think that they're, above all, actually, they're kind of like an impressive band. Like, they have so many singles. And for a rock band to do that in this day and age, that is impressive. Like, they are like a, you know, hard-working, like, old-school American rock band. They're like a Tom Petty type of band. I heard somebody compare them to Tom Petty one time. I was like, yeah, that's a good comparison. Because they're kind of poppy, like, very accessible, very kind of mainstream and commercial. And their success kind of bears that out. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you listen to the music, it's like, oh yeah, this is, like, catchy. You know, Nirvana was catchy sometimes. But Nirvana was, like, very kind of melodic. I mean, it depends on the song. Some Nirvana is, like, very heavy. Some of it's more kind of, like, ballady and, like, moody and, like, melodic. Melodic, that's more the word I'm looking for. They never really did, like, an out-and-out ballad. Actually, Something in the Way, I think, is probably their, like, ballad. But anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, I don't know. I can't help it because, like, and I remember, like, the moment I was watching this show. I used to, like, after school, I used to, like, watch these, like, stupid, like, VH1 shows where they would have, like, these lists and they would have, like, all these things. And I would get really into that shit. And then I was watching this one where it was, like, the hottest people, the hottest entertainers. Who knows what the fuck it was? It's probably, like, 12 or something. And I remember they talked about Dave Grohl. They said Dave Grohl was hot, and this was a shocking moment for me. This actually connects to what I was talking about on a previous episode about the Blink-182 guys. Like, this was shocking. I was like, girls think Dave Grohl is hot? Like, what the fuck? What is happening? I was like, he's a drummer. Girls think drummers are hot? I should have been a drummer this whole fucking time. My dad's a fucking drummer, you know what I mean? It was a moment for me. So, anyway, I never really realized that girls thought drummers were hot. I didn't realize drumming could get you laid. Maybe that's why I started drumming. And it still didn't work. But anyway. What the fuck was I saying? Oh, yeah. So girls think Dave Grohl is hot, apparently. News to me. And yeah, so he was on this list, and then they were talking about how he was the drummer for Nirvana, and I was like, what? Dave Grohl? The guy from Foo Fighters? I think. I don't even remember, like, how I knew, or if I even knew. I was like, who's Dave Grohl? And they were like, he's a drummer? And I was like, what? And he's hot? It was just, like, a really weird moment for me. That's why I still remember it. I was like, what? What are they talking about? I was like, drummers aren't hot. Like, that's my dad. My dad's a drummer. Like, girls don't want to fuck drummers. And then, according to VH1, girls want to fuck drummers. So, so that's just, you know, my perspective on it. Because I grew up with it being very normal. For most people, it's not normal. Being a musician is not normal. For me, it was, like, very normal. It's like, yeah, that's what my dad does. So, what was I saying? Okay, so Dave Grohl. So anyway, I learned from this show, and I don't know how much I knew or didn't know. I don't even think I knew any of it. I don't think I knew who Dave Grohl was. I knew who Nirvana was, obviously, and I knew who the Foo Fighters were, but I don't think I even knew who Dave Grohl was. So I learned in this little, whatever, 5-minute segment, I learned who Dave Grohl was. So I found out that he was the drummer for Nirvana. Kurt Cobain kills himself in 1994, and then Dave Grohl starts Foo Fighters, I think in 1995. So he was sort of like the phoenix that rose from the ashes of Nirvana. And then he got even, weirdly, it's like Foo Fighters got even more successful than Nirvana in some ways. Now, I was thinking about it this morning, and like, to me, kind of like the peak of success, the height of success, is Nirvana. Like, Nirvana, not only did they change music, they actually changed culture. So this is a rock band. Not only did they become the biggest band in the world, not only did they have the biggest selling album of the 90s with Nevermind, that might not actually be true. It could be like Janet Jackson or Cher or somebody, but, or NSYNC, you know what I mean? But again, yeah, speaking of NSYNC, this isn't NSYNC, this isn't Backstreet Boys. These are like three punks from Seattle who started a band and then ended up becoming the biggest band in the world. And yeah, like I said, they ended up changing not only music, but culture. They created grunge, sort of. I mean, the grunge scene already existed in Seattle, but what they did was actually they brought it to the world. That's actually what Nirvana did, in terms of the grunge scene. So they actually made it mainstream, so which is uncool in a way, and kind of goes against the whole ethos. And I do think it fucked with Kurt Cobain's head. I do think it's one of the reasons he killed himself, because he got so famous. I think it just, like, fucked him up. He didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, that's my theory. He was, you know, clinically depressed, and he had, like, real... He had IBS. He had, like, real issues. Oh, and not to mention the fact that he was a heroin addict, a chain smoker. I mean, the dude, you know, obviously didn't take care of himself. And yeah, I'm sure that didn't help with the depression or anything. And like, depression wasn't as well understood back then as it is now. Psychology has advanced a lot. So I think people really didn't even know how to treat depression back then. And I think he was a deeply depressed person, but I'm not going to, you know, get into the psychology of Kurt Cobain. I don't know what happened there, but I do believe that he blew off his head with a shotgun. You know, there are conspiracy theorists who believe that, Courtney Love did it, or Courtney Love, you know, set it up, hired somebody to do it. I actually don't think that's true. I believe, like, maybe certain things or certain parts of certain conspiracy theories, including some 9/11 conspiracy theories, but I won't get into that, because that might start sounding too crazy. But in terms of the Kurt Cobain stuff, I don't think any of that's true. I think the dude was depressed. I think he was very famous, very rich, very brilliant. I think it all kind of went to his head. It all kind of fucked with him. He was a weird guy anyway. He was a... Kurt Cobain was a creative genius, and I think with that comes some issues. I think that's a blessing and a curse. I'm not saying that's the case for me, necessarily. It could be. Remains to be seen. But I think for a lot of creatives, especially creatives that are, like, exceedingly talented, there can be a break from reality that happens, and I do think that happened with Kanye West. I think when his mom died, he broke from reality. A little bit. I mean, I do think he's still doing good work. And I support a lot of, like, what he does on social media and stuff, you know. I'm not going to say it's good that he was on Instagram every day talking about how Kim's taking his kids away from him. But I don't know. I kind of support it at the same time. You know, he should be able to say what he wants on social media. And I also don't like Pete Davidson, so I don't mind him, you know, calling him skeet and giving him shit about everything. I even tweeted something negative about him, but obviously I'm not Kanye West, so nobody gave a shit. But anyway. Whew. That was a real, like, kind of coffee-based tangent. All right, let me take this hit and calm down a little bit, and then we'll get into some movie talk. That's what we're all really here for. Smoke if you got 'em. Chin chin. Peace. One love. Damn, I really want more weed right now. I'm just feeling it. So yesterday was a good day. And last night was a good night. A lot happened yesterday. Yesterday was Friday, March 25th. Right now it's 7:52 a.m. And it's Saturday, March 26th, 2022. But yesterday was the last Friday in March. And a lot happened yesterday. A lot of things dropped. The deluxe version of Crash by Charlie XCX dropped. Some cool bonus tracks on there. Check them out. Currently the number one pop album on Apple Music, and also apparently the number one album in, I think, Australia, Ireland, and the UK, the number one album, Charlie XCX's Crash, her first debut number one. I think all that's true. I might not have all the info correct, but I think that's true. Anyway, Crash is killing it. Congratulations to Charlie XCX, a true talent in the pop sphere, and a true pop star for our day and age, in my opinion. I like her better than Grimes, better than Rosalia. She's my favorite pop star right now, Charlie XCX. Although I do think Rosalia's album, actually as an album, is like slightly better from like an artistic standpoint. But Charlie XCX's Crash is a perfect pop album. So check it out if you haven't heard already. So also dropped yesterday, I think, Aldous Harding? Is that the name? Yes, Warm Chris is the name of the album. I think Aldous Harding is actually, like, a hot chick. Sounds like a gross dude, but it's actually a hot chick. Or maybe not a hot chick. Maybe she's trans. I hope not, because then I'd be embarrassed. She kind of looks trans. Actually, she kind of looks like Lady Gaga at some points. I'm just watching her, like, weird Apple Music thing with, like, the Lighthouse mermaid makeup. This dropped yesterday, got BNM, which is Best New Music from Pitchfork, and then also dropped yesterday Gifted by Coffee and Melt My Eyes, See Your Future by Denzel Curry, which right now is my favorite album that dropped yesterday. It is over long. They could have maybe cut out a track or two, but it's cool. Sonically, it's cool. The rhymes are cool. I kind of feel like listening to it again, actually. That was kind of my album for last night. Along with Gifted by Coffee, which is basically a reggae album. Kind of like a new reggae album, bringing reggae back as if it went anywhere. So I listened to like about half of that album, just over half. I'll almost definitely finish that today. Yesterday, Camp Cope dropped an album, Running with the Hurricane. Oh, and of course, Destroyer. Oh, okay, Diaspora Problems, Soul Glow, and then, of course, Destroyer dropped Labyrinthitis, which I liked a lot. It's a really good album. It might be, like, the best album of the year so far. It's definitely one of the best albums of the year so far. Chili Peppers dropped a new song, kind of a ballady song called Not the One. I liked it, but I go for their funkier stuff more. So that's pretty much that. And then in terms of movies, so, I don't know what happened last night. I was gonna watch a Darren Lynn Bousman movie. I don't know, I was just kind of in the mood for that. The Death of Me is on Netflix. Sorry, I just like put my phone away. I don't know why I'm still fucking recording. Hope you can hear me okay. Yep, still recording. So, yeah, but I didn't watch that. I was kind of looking around, seeing what's on, seeing what's new, seeing what's happening. And I ended up on Amazon Prime, okay? And I found some movies. It's always like the same movies that come up, but then I dig through it like a, you know, crate digger, and I end up finding some dope shit at the bottom. So I found a movie called Strike Commando, which I watched the shit out of this morning. I still have about 10 minutes left to watch. It's a really fun, kind of cool Vietnam movie. I mean, it's a little like weird and dated and kind of like stiff, and there's like, I don't know, I just loved it, though. I had so much fun watching it. It had this kind of adventure element to it. I was even thinking, like, how I would make a Vietnam movie, if I would even make a Vietnam movie. I was thinking about it. I mean, I think that, for me, Vietnam, like, the Iraq War was a fake war. You know, it was America imposing itself on another country. Now, I'm not a political analyst, so I'm not gonna, you know, get into this stuff, but, to me, that's really what it was, so it doesn't even count as a war, and it's just kind of a bullshit thing, but, like, in the case of World War II, like, for me, I would definitely make a World War II movie. I mean, no question. That's my favorite war, which sounds fucking weird, but, like, it really is. I mean, we had a real enemy, the Nazis, fascism. It had to be destroyed. It had to be taken down. And, you know, that's exciting. That's cool. It had to happen. A lot of people died. It was really fucked up. The Holocaust is one of the most fucked up things that ever happened. But that's the reason why the world went to war. So, the world, quote unquote, the white world. I would definitely do that. Because it's like, I don't know. I was even thinking about last night, like, what war would I even fight in? I wouldn't have fought in Vietnam. I would have dodged the draft. I would have gone to Canada. Just anything to avoid going to Vietnam. But World War II, I mean, you're telling me I'm going to go kill Nazis? All right. You know, sign me up. I'll strap on a fucking pack. I'll load up a fucking machine gun. Let's go. You know? So, I would have been a fucking inglorious bastard back then. I would have been the fucking Bear Jew. Eyes forward. So, what was I saying? Fuck. Yeah, I really want to smoke more. All right, I gotta finish this episode first, sorry. yeah, so that's Strike Commando. Oh, the other thing I liked about it was, okay, I like some of the tropes. Like, I think about this book, okay, so Edgar Wright talked about, like, during the making of Hot Fuzz, like, he talked about this book by Roger Ebert that he and, Simon Pegg had referenced during the writing of Hot Fuzz, and it was called Roger Ebert's Big Book of Hollywood Clichés. I can't find this book anywhere. I'm not even convinced that it exists, but Edgar Wright, you know, talks about this fucking book. He still fucking talks about it, so... I don't know, it's just really interesting to me, this idea, and how so many of those cliches are kind of, like, inserted into Hot Fuzz, and you, like, don't even notice it, a lot of them. Some of them, you know, obviously do, but, like, there are so many, like, Hollywood cliches in that movie, but done in, like, a British way. I don't know, it's, like, yeah, that's a very clever movie, but anyway, So I was thinking about that while watching it, and I was kind of lamenting the loss of, like, a lot of these tropes, and I was thinking about The Green Inferno by Eli Roth, which almost feels like his Vietnam movie in a weird way. I don't know if that's, like, weird or racist to say, but, like, it just, or I don't know about racist, but xenophobic to say. Maybe it sounds that way. I don't know. Another thing I was thinking about with Hot Fuzz was, there's this, not an interview, but a conversation between, Kevin Smith's got all these podcasts. He's got, like, a few different podcasts, and he used to have one called, I think it was called Smoothie Makers. Because all his podcasts are on what's called the Smodcast Network. So it's him and Scott Mosier. They started Smodcast. And then that became the Smodcast Network. So they start, you know, he started other podcasts and so on. So, what the fuck was I saying? Oh, Smoothie Makers. Yeah. So Edgar Wright, was on an episode of Smoothie Makers. He only did a few of them. One of them, my other favorite one was with, Richard Kelly. That was fucking cool. Cause that dude, you don't hear from a lot. But Edgar Wright, you do hear from a lot, but this was still like a really cool interview. You know, it was like almost like a collab, like, Kevin Smith x Edgar Wright, which even, I think there's even the video for it on YouTube. It wasn't recorded on video, but like, just there's like a YouTube, of it anyway. So, you know, just the audio, that's what I'm trying to say. So, fuck, I keep losing my train of thought. Yeah, so Edgar Wright, Kevin Smith, what were they talking about? Oh, yeah, okay, so this is like Scott Pilgrim era. So you have to, like, put yourself back then, picture it. You know, we're going back 10 years, more than 10 years. I think this interview was from 2010. Or not interview, conversation, was from 2010. And I think Scott Pilgrim had come out, had not done well. I think Scott Pilgrim was still playing in theaters. I think he even says it. But the Blu-ray was out, so maybe not. I don't remember. And I've listened to this so many times, but it's been a long time since I listened to it, because I had to stop. I couldn't listen to it anymore. So... yeah, so Edgar Wright and, Kevin Smith. Oh, yeah, so he's actually talking about Hot Fuzz, which, you know, you picture it back then, because now Hot Fuzz is a classic, at least to me. Like, it's just, like, a classic movie, like, definitely, like, a classic British movie for me. But, I mean, back then, that was his last movie. Like, that was the last movie Edgar Wright made, so he was still kind of talking about it that way as, like, you know, this movie that he had kind of, like, just made a few years ago, so... he was talking about a test screening that they did for it, and he said there were two old ladies sitting in the front, or maybe he said older ladies, I don't remember how he said it, but they were sitting in the front, and after the screening, they had a little Q&A with the audience, so they asked them things, like, what did you like about the movie, what did you not like about the movie, who was your favorite character, things like that. So, at one point, they went to these old ladies and asked them, you know, what did you like about the movie? And they said, we liked the scenery. And, like, Edgar Wright, and I've even heard him tell this story in, like, other interviews and stuff, or other, what would you call it? Other platforms, formats? I don't know what the word is. But he quotes that line, we like the scenery. I mean, he does it with his British accent, but he even says it like that. And I always remember that in a weird way, because it's almost like, yeah, that's like, that is part of it. Like, if you think about it, like, yeah, you're watching a movie, you're watching the characters, you're watching the actors, you're watching the story, you're watching the action, you're listening to the dialogue, but then there's this element of, where are they? What is the setting? What is happening around them visually? Okay. And that's the scenery. And these old ladies, they watched this fucking movie, Hot Fuzz. They liked the scenery. Okay? And it was there for them to like. And they liked it. What was my point there? I have no idea. Where was I even going with that? I just got totally off track. And I just got a text involving food, which means I'm going to have to go. Fuck. I know there was, like, a point to all this, but I don't remember what the fuck it was. Hot Fuzz, the scenery. What was I talking about? So I thought of that. I thought of that story while I was watching Strike Commando, because one thing I do like about Vietnam movies is I like, I like them visually. I like the aesthetic. I like the aesthetic of Vietnam, frankly. I like how it looks. I like the rice paddies. I like the palm trees. I like the palm fronds, whatever those big leaves are called. I'm not a fucking botanist. I don't know what that shit's called, but it looks fucking great. I love it. I love plants. God damn it. I want plants in the frame. So, you know, I like it visually. And Apocalypse Now, I think of, like, just visually, aesthetically, it's just, like, one of the greatest movies ever made. And, I mean, it's, okay, maybe I can't, well, no, I can say that. Apocalypse Now is one of the greatest movies ever made. But really, my point is, Apocalypse Now is one of the greatest war movies ever made, and it's a Vietnam movie. It's the greatest Vietnam movie ever made, besides Casualties of War, which I love, which is it's a De Palma war movie. It's a different kind of thing. It's almost more, like, it's actually more Tarantino. The way, like, Inglourious Basterds is a war movie, but it's, like, not really a war movie. Like, there aren't any battle scenes, per se. I mean, there's, you know, some, well, more than some. There is machine gun action in that movie, but it's, like, it's not, you know, it's not Saving Private Ryan. When I think of a war movie, I think of Saving Private Ryan. And when I think of a serial killer movie, I think of Seven. I'm a 90s kid. What can I say? Those are the standard for me. But seriously, like, when I think of that genre, like, war movie, like, it's just, like, it's Saving Private Ryan. It's the opening scene. It's the D-Day scene. Like, that's a fucking war movie. Like, Spielberg just, like, put your ass in it, son. You're in D-Day. That's one of the most incredible sequences ever filmed. It is the most incredible sequence in any war movie. For me, personally. I saw that shit young. Like, too young. And that shit fucked my day up. But it also changed my life. Like, seriously, literally changed my life. Like, I look back at it now. At the time, it really, like, freaked me out. Like, I was scared of it. But I look back at it now, and I was like, maybe that's how I got into gore. It was from Saving Private Ryan. Fucking Spielberg, of all people, is who got me into gore. Maybe. I don't actually know. But, and it's also fucked up because it's, like, real gore. But the way Spielberg does it, like, it is, like, that scene is entertaining. And to some people, that's actually fucked up. But, I don't know, to me that's awesome. And that's kind of what Inglourious Basterds is, too. It's like, it makes war entertaining. Even though there aren't any, like I said, there aren't any war scenes per se. That's more of, like, all the behind-the-scenes stuff. That's kind of like what Inglourious Basterds is. It's a guerrilla mission, you know. It's a bunch of guys on a mission movie. That's what Inglourious Basterds is. Anyway, Strike Commando makes war fun, too, I think. And it is a nomsploitation movie, I guess, in some ways. It's from 1986. Bruno Mattei, I think, directed it. So this is an Italian Vietnam movie. And it was, I think, dubbed over. I was seeing Rubbery Lips. I was seeing dubbed over. But I noticed that some people were speaking English. So maybe some people were speaking Italian. Some people were speaking English. I'm not clear on all of that. But check it out. It's dope. Something I've been really into lately is Italian cinema, like, kind of from that era, kind of like from the 80s, I guess, like early to mid 80s, where they take American genres and do their, like, weird, fun, kind of, like, bright, poppy, colorful versions of them. Like, they do it with crime movies in the 70s with the Fernando De Leo movies. Argento did it with horror movies, creating the Giallo movie. I'm not saying that was taking American genres, but in this case, so taking the Vietnam movie, doing their version of it. Also taking, like, the sci-fi movie. Like, I love the weird Italian sci-fi movies from that era. And also the Mad Max ripoffs, which are Australian, obviously. But, so not American. But, like, Warriors of the Wasteland was one I talked about on a previous episode. And they have some of these weird movies on Amazon Prime for free if you have Amazon Prime. Like, watch this shit. It's crazy. If you're listening to this podcast, trust me, you want to watch this shit. So, the other movie I watched was before that. And by the way, I'll have a little preview of the movie I'm going to watch tonight because I did find it. But before that, I watched, I Know What It Was. Fucking White Lightning with Burt fucking Reynolds, the guy who was gonna play George Spahn in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but he unfortunately passed away. Rest in peace. So Burt Reynolds is this kind of good old boy, but he's kind of, like, personable and funny and kind of cool, and just, he's kind of doing his Burt Reynolds thing, and it's great. and it's prime Burt Reynolds, 1973. He's in jail, I believe, down south somewhere. I don't really know what happens. I fell asleep. Somebody's a moonshiner. I think he's a moonshiner. It's a moonshining movie. And there's a piece of music that Tarantino used. I don't know if it was in Death Proof or what it was. I believe it was somewhere in that era. And this piece of music just comes in shockingly at one moment. And it's just like so great to hear it. But they kind of, I love that Tarantino used it, because in this movie, they did kind of waste it. You know, they kind of threw it away early. It's kind of like a nothing scene where he's just like walking from one room to another. I don't know. It was just kind of weird that they used this piece of music for that. So I love that Tarantino took it and used it much more effectively. And better. He reappropriated it in a great way. So, but watch White Lightning if you've never seen it. It's great to hear that music in it. It's great to see Burt Reynolds in his prime. And it's great to see a moonshining movie. When was the last time you watched a moonshining movie? They don't even make them anymore. And Tarantino has talked about making one. And I would love to see that. I would love for that to be his 10th movie. I don't think it will be. I don't think we'll ever see the Tarantino moonshining movie. But moonshining could be an element in some of his movies. Death Proof definitely dabbled in the sort of southern fried good old boy movie. It never really got into the kind of moonshining movie, but it definitely got into some, like, yeah, it got into some White Lightning territory, as well as some Vanishing Point territory, but that's a separate thing. So, in the case of White Lightning, oh no, in the case of Tarantino, he has threatened to make a moonshining movie, and he has said that he was in Tennessee at that time, probably around the time of this movie, like early 70s, and he actually admits, he's like, I actually know a little bit about that, like in a real way, and even just the way he says it, I can tell he means like, oh, like he was actually like there for this, like in real life, like real shit, like he actually knows something about it, like from his own sort of like real lived experience, you know what I mean? Because I think, you know, Tarantino's a true kind of like film geek, he's a true movie guy, so he probably like, I mean, you know, definitely a lot of what he has learned over the years, and maybe most of what he has learned over the years comes from movies, but then in the case of Moonshining, if he was going to make a movie about it, he actually knows a little bit about it from real life. So I think that would be kind of interesting. It seems like it would almost be like a more realistic Tarantino movie, but also kind of more like fun and comedic. I think that would just be a great opportunity for him, but I just don't think it'll ever happen. You know what I mean? If he was just going to keep making movies, I mean, sure, maybe someday he would make his moonshining movie. And of course, the other issue is there is zero audience now these days for a moonshining movie, besides, you know, five people in fucking South Carolina or Georgia or somewhere still moonshine. I mean, I don't know. There's like, it would be a very niche audience. Obviously I would be there with bells on, first day, first show, but that's, for me, that's any Tarantino movie, but I do think that would be really interesting. I'm always curious about these kind of weird, like, side projects that Tarantino teases. Like, he teased making a trailer for Cowgirls in Sweden for Grindhouse, and then he teased after that that he would actually make it as a feature, possibly. It would be, like, an erotic movie, kind of like his, like, sexploitation movie, which Death Proof, dipped into a little bit, a tiny bit, but it never really went there. But that would be like his full-on kind of like erotic movie, I guess. So that would be really interesting. It'd be interesting to see him make a sexploitation movie. It'd be interesting to see him make a moonshining movie. I don't think these things will ever happen, especially at this point. I think that's all kind of in the past, but it, you know, elements of those ideas or those projects could enter into future projects for Tarantino, including, you know, novels, books, plays, whatever. So okay, so the other thing I watched last night was the first episode of season 3 of Atlanta, which finally premiered on FX. It's available on Hulu. It's great. It's a great opening. Maybe the best of the three seasons. I still love the one where they rob the fast food joint. I think that's season 2. Yeah, and season 1 had a dope opening too. So maybe this is actually the weakest of the three. I don't know. in some ways it's the strongest. It's kind of like an interesting story and very kind of like current. It's like this young black kid is kind of living in an abusive household. He ends up leaving. He's put into foster care, and the care ends up being even worse. He's living with these two crazy lesbians who serve him nasty undercooked food that he can't even eat. They have a garden. They're like very much kind of like, I don't know what you would call it, woke, sort of neoliberal. And it all, you know, it all kind of goes downhill from there. And spoiler alert, he ends up back at his home with his mom. But, and then Earn comes into it at the end, Donald Glover. And then it was written by Stephen Glover, his brother, directed by Hiro Murai, who I think has directed most of the episodes of Atlanta. And there, I think there's already episode 2 on Hulu, which I'll probably watch tonight. What else will I watch tonight? Okay, here it is. Spoiler alert, if you don't want to know, turn off the episode now. Tonight, I will be watching Charles Bronson in From Noon Till 3 with Jill Ireland. If you have not listened to the Tarantino's Movie Club, or Tarantino Movie Club, I forget what it's called, but it's one of the episodes of the Pure Cinema podcast, and this is one of the movies that's part of his film club that he wants people to watch, is From Noon Till 3. He talks about it, recommends it. Tarantino's a big Bronson fan, as am I, really because of Tarantino or from Tarantino. I didn't even know who Charles Bronson was. I'd never seen The Great Escape. So Tarantino kind of introduced me to Bronson. And there's another Bronson movie that I'd like to watch. And these are both on Amazon Prime. The other one's called Chato's Land. I think he plays an Apache. He probably has brown face on, which is not something I'm into, but of course I'm going to watch the movie because it's Charles Bronson and it's 70s and I'm down. From 10 to midnight, what is that one called? From 10 to midnight, or 10 to midnight, the J. Lee Thompson Bronson canon movie from the 80s is also on Amazon Prime. I started it on HBO Max. I think I watched about half of it and loved it. It's great. It's crazy. It's cool. Freaky. So I will be finishing that on Amazon Prime at some point. So that's another one. Yeah. That's another one that needs to go on the list. So yeah, I've been watching a lot, listening to a lot of music. Didn't get a chance to read any of my book yesterday. Only Americans Burn in Hell by Jared Kobach, but hopefully I'll have a chance to read some of it today. And I think that's going to do it. So rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins. Listen to Foo Fighters today. Check out Amazon Prime. and I think that's it. Read some books. Listen to some music, maybe some reggae, maybe some coffee, maybe some Denzel Curry. Maybe that's more your speed. I guess that's really all I have to say for now. Thank you for listening. Peace.